can't wait for today's episode because you mentioned you used to work in hospitality, and
I did.
I dabbled in that a little bit. I also worked at a restaurant. I sucked at that as well. So we'll be able to share kind of that experience.
Yeah, no, I worked in hospitality all the way, like high school all the way through. So
nice. Well, thank you so much for joining, Matt.
Of course.
Matt Holmes with New York Life. Been an agent since September, but man, loving it ever since. So we're excited to hear about your journey from what you did prior to what you do now and how you help everybody within your network. So I've also got Mel.
Hi.
From St. Germain. Thanks for joining us again, Mel. And of course, I'm Alex with Simply Gold. All right, well, let's dive right into it, man. So
Sure. Let's
talk about like your previous life. So just kind of start from the beginning. Yeah. Were you like in the mailroom back in 16 years ago?
I was raised in a cattle ranch in West Texas, right? So it might not seem like a natural progression, I guess, to Four Seasons. But then I actually went to culinary school in Italy. I went to Texas Tech and got a restaurant, hotel, and institutional management degree. I came right out of college, and I was running the fine dining restaurant at Four Seasons. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. And I thought I was going to own my own restaurant one day. I thought I was going to be a foodie. Opportunities presented itself, and you know, I just kept going up and up and up. And this is, you know, 2008 when no one was really doing much of anything.
Right.
No one was going to Four Seasons for sure because no one could afford it. So, you know, as opportunities presented itself, I took them, but there were also a lot of limited opportunities. So I just kind of swung branch to branch, and I've worked at Four Seasons, the Jewel, Omni.
The Jewel is awesome.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the Jewel?
No, it's I have not.
Totally cool. They have a pool that over like jets out.
Yep.
So you can swim in this section and kind of like look straight down.
And the pool is
that
off.
Would freak me
it's
out.
Like yeah. past the edge.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Their restaurant kicks ass too.
I don't like heights. So
yeah, CBD. CBD is good stuff. Shout out to CBD.
Yep. So what makes the Four Seasons get so expensive just in general? Is it just designed to be a luxury brand or is
no,
it?
I mean, so I actually used to own my own consulting firm too, and I would go on and, you know, kind of teach fine dining Forbes and AAA standards to staff. And, you know, the difference between a Holiday Inn and a Four Seasons is employee engagement and lots of employees.
Mm-hmm.
You walk into a Four Seasons and you expect someone to take the bag out of your hand and hand you a drink and walk you straight to your room.
Right.
The expectation at a Holiday Inn isn't that, but that doesn't mean you can't get good service.
Right? No, they have their beer in a cooler.
Right.
Have you ever been to one of those?
No.
So Holiday Inn they do little parties.
Yeah.
Like on Wednesday nights. They just put a cooler in the lobby and
like
everyone hangs out in the
like
lobby.
Like a box of Francia.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's super chill.
I'd say Hilton doesn't know how to have a good time.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
See, I always stayed at the Embassy Suites. That's my mom's like go-to place. Yep. So, and they do a happy hour every night.
Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So that's cool.
That was always her jam.
Yeah. Yeah. And so from, you know, I just kind of moved up and, you know, took transfers, worked in Park City, Utah, worked in San Antonio, and... You know, after COVID, it just wasn't the same girl I brought to the dance, so to speak. It was just it was a lot harder. People had been cooped up for a long time. The expectations were still what they were pre-COVID, and the entire industry just wasn't ready. And I think we introduced a lot of people to working from home. And I think a lot of hope you understand the context of what I'm saying. People understood that they're worth much more than what they're getting paid, and without them, they can't. You know, operators can't run the business. So pre-COVID, we were hiring housekeepers $12, $13 an hour is a very, very solid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I left the industry, $18, $19 an hour, that's just 4 years. I mean, it's not like it's an insane amount of time.
Right.
So it just became one of those things where, you know, I have a kid now. I have a seven-year-old, and it became one of those things. I was working way more than I was spending time with my son and my wife and, excuse me, and it got to the point where it wasn't worth it anymore. I didn't look forward to going to work. And I think if you really love something that you're doing, then you should be excited a little bit. You know, obviously you still want to hang out with your family. I'm not saying you instantly start hating your family, but you should want to, there's a little more gusto, I guess. And I kind of looked around, I had mentored a lot of people in my career, and I actually called one of them that I knew made the transition out of hospitality. And I said, you know, tell me about, I wasn't calling about, you know, financial services. I was just saying, what does that transition look like? And he was very frank with me. And he was like, you need to come work for New York Life. All the soft skills you have to have, you know, in hospitality translate really well.
Right.
And it can be, you know, lucrative if you know what you're doing and you don't, you know, completely suck at it. And So I did it, and I've loved it ever since. I'm having a really great time doing it.
But a lot of your roles that you had in the hospitality, in my opinion, is my perception is that it wasn't sales driven, right? Nope. It was more a lot of still relationships.
Correct.
Calling everybody guests, and so how does that apply to a very strong sales role, right? How would you describe that?
Yeah, I think as my wife would put it, leave it to me to kind of jump into one of the hardest things to sell on the planet, right? It's one of those things everybody wants, nobody wants to talk about, but yet everybody needs it. I think because what I do is so intimate, nobody wants to talk to a stranger about how much you have, how much you owe, and how much you make, right? So it's my job to get to know people and to get to know people on a different level where they can open up and they feel comfortable saying, you know what, I do have $20,000 of credit card debt, or I'm upside down in my mortgage, and until I do this, can you help me? I'm scared I'm not going to be able to retire.
Right.
And I think there's a stigma that comes along with that. And, because of my previous background, where the worst thing you can do whenever you're a hotel is, or when you're in a management position, period, is throw your staff under the bus. You're absolutely right. I'm so sorry. We messed up. I'm going to go talk to that employee. That's awful. That's not going to get you anywhere, right? But when you can... What I used to tell people is, if you can empathize where an upset guest is coming from, or in my now latter life, a client is coming from, if you can empathize with them, put yourself in their shoes, understand that this is their hard-earned money and they don't want to lose it, and they want clear expectations and things like that. I think the soft skills then translate, because you have to know how to make bad situation in some cases better, or just be able to call and say, hey, how's it going? If there was an upset guest and they were yelling and screaming, telling me they're going to have my job in one day, the next day I'm not avoiding that guest. I'm going to go find the guest and say, hey, how is everything? How's the rest of your stay going? And
right.
It's just like this too. Hey, know you started a new job. You're a little nervous about, maybe putting a little bit more in, this fund or whatever. How are you feeling? How are your bills working out? I had that conversation actually last night. It was a former bellman of mine, and he finally took a salary job, and he didn't know what his life was going to look like on a steady paycheck, because he's never had it. It's always been cash, right? Unfortunately, when you have cash, you don't have any retirement, really, right? You're not really interested in the 401k because your paycheck's so small,
right?
So we were able to set him up and taught him how to be patient, walked him through, what that looks like. Let's talk about servicing your debt. And so it's very rewarding, but the soft skills you learn from, especially I guess being at my level, I guess kind of what you were saying, to where I can talk to, but by the time you were talking to me in a hotel, guess what? I mean, you were mad. You got through a couple layers of management. You were upset. It's one of those things I had to really master, empathizing and getting on that level with the guest and taking them out of, not coming from a defensive standpoint. And I think it relates to financial services. Don't be disappointed when people say no. It's not necessarily a no. And I think that doesn't just apply to financial services. It's sales everywhere.
Right.
A no today is not a no tomorrow. Right. And so you just have to kind of stay at it and stay positive. So.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most common question you get asked when you're talking about life insurance with somebody? What's the bam? That's always the question.
Why do I need it? Is usually the biggest one. I think more than anything, people view life insurance as death insurance, right? They think that it's there just in case you die. And that's not the case at all. A lot of people don't realize that you can use your life insurance policy later in life to borrow against it, or you can take it out. All the proceeds from a life insurance, if it's set up correctly, you can use later in life as your retirement. And it cannibalizes itself, but as you retire, your coverage doesn't need to be as high, right? You're also getting that tax-free when it comes back to you. So it's a great vehicle to use, not just as death insurance, right? But yes, that is why it's there. It's like renting a house. You rent a house because you need a house to stay in, right? It does its job.
Mm-hmm.
You're not building equity in that house, though. So when you have permanent life insurance, you are gaining equity in it, and it can just really add to your portfolio in a really robust way. So, I think people only think there's one type of life insurance also.
So what are the different types of life insurance?
Man, there is. So we sell 89 different products.
Wow.
Not all of them are life insurance, but for the most part, it is, right? That's what we specialize in, is turning that life insurance into part of your portfolio. So I'd say the one everybody knows, just in basic terms, is term.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's permanent, right? Just to make it very simple. Permanent can be whole life, where you're going to get guaranteed returns and you're going to get guaranteed dividends. You know exactly how much it's going to be. And then if you're comfortable exposing it to the market, there's a variable product. So variable universal life is something I sell.
I couldn't keep track of all this stuff.
Yeah, no, and that's why my brain works. Like, I'm thinking about 15 things mm-hmm. all at the same time. And if that's why it's important, like, when you have someone in finance, you sit with them. You know, one of the reasons I got into this, we got $1 million policy on my wife, right? It's a term policy. Whenever I came to New York Life, they're like, great, who's it with? What's your agent's name? And since the day we put the policy in force, I haven't heard from that person. I don't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you the company today. I know it's around
I have somewhere. Policies like that. Right. I don't even know how to log into them. I forgot where I bought them from, right. What exactly. They cost.
But so
like,
what happens? How do you access it if you don't?
Like, well, you can always call, happens? Like, if it was New York Life, for example, right. Like, someone will find it. It's yes. In the computer
someone
somewhere.
Someone will find it. And, like, I know the guy who... Basically, I know what company like third partied it out, right? So I can trace it back. But wouldn't it be great if your financial advisor sat down with you every year and or once a quarter and or before you even invested, got to know you and what your goals and your plans are, rather than hey, here's this product, which one do you want to do? You know,
right?
And that's something we really pride ourselves on is making sure that it's a customized approach to each person, because every person's not going to have the same goals in retirement or capabilities at this stage in life that they are later in life. So
what? I know when I got life insurance, mm-hmm. The first time I got life insurance.
Through Brittany Hendry, awesome agent.
No, she wasn't awesome the agent. First person.
Oh, never mind.
We love Brittany Hendry. Yes.
So I got it, and I paid a lot of money for mm-hmm. a very low policy, and then I talked to Brittany and got way more money. So how does that, why is it such a difference between different companies on pricing? Or can you?
Yeah, no, so... It really depends on how the company's structured, right? So a little bit about New York Life. They've been around 178 years. Out of those 178, they've paid a dividend to their mutual shareholders, which is the customers, 177 of those 178 years. The only year was the ninth year.
Only year that they did not was the ninth year.
Right.
Yep.
Right. It was 1830 or 40-something, right? so, yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe they're installing electricity
in
the
building.
So
Alex's birthday. Yeah,
right. So, and
you're almost the same age as me.
I know.
I have to say, I'm like, y'all make me feel real old right now. I'm not going to lie. So a lot of companies are not mutualities, right? What a mutuality is, I mean, we don't have a board of directors. We don't have shareholders that we owe certain profits to. Our shareholders are our policyholders. So that's first and foremost, right? It's like when you loan against your life insurance policy, you're only paying yourself back, right? So who cares what the interest rate is, or who cares if you don't pay it back? It's just right. Coming out of it, right? So... the second is our reserves. We have the highest financial rating you can possibly get anywhere, right? We're number 70 on Forbes 500. But what that means is if we were to pay out every single policy, give everybody their money back, cashed out everything we have, we would still have over $3 billion in reserves. So that comes with the security. A lot of people will charge, and there's a lot of great companies out there, but they'll charge upfront or they'll charge absorbing amounts because maybe they're a newer company, their reserves aren't, they're a little nervous about their reserves or whatever your health rating might be. It just kind of depends. But I know with New York Life, it's kind of one of those products, you know exactly what you're getting and you don't really have to worry about it. It's not uncommon, especially in like 2008. 2008 was the best year New York Life's ever had. And the reason being is a lot of these companies were going out of business. They were like, oh, sorry, your policy is now with this person, and they would sell it off to somebody else. Right. And so, we don't have that problem, and I think that's why New York Life can charge a little bit less, is because we know our rates are a little bit more competitive because we can back it up, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah, and you have to get stabbed in the arm.
You do. Yeah. It just depends.
I learned, yeah. So I tried to take a test for a policy, and mm-hmm. Everything was red.
Yeah.
So I'm in a process to get them into the green. So...
Yeah, it was cool though. The lady came to my house had to pee in a cup in my own house. That was a little weird, but
very awkward. I've been there too. Yeah, and they're just like, for me, she was just talking to my wife and kid in the kitchen table, and I was like, be right back. Cool.
Yeah.
Here's my cup of pee.
Well, and then you're like, okay, so what is this? What readings are going to come back? And then that big long list comes back, mm-hmm. and you're like, I don't know what the hell that means.
Yeah, yeah, and. A lot of people wonder, hey, why don't you just use my latest checkup? Well, we're looking for different things than what the doctor had
a checkup recently. So right.
There's that too,
yeah.
Right?
But I was super surprised. Mm-hmm. Like, the rates. That was great.
Yep. Yep. I think that's one of the biggest stigmas with life insurance is it's super expensive. If you just want to get term life insurance for a 35-year-old, I mean, we're talking 20, 30 bucks a month. Mm-hmm. It's not like health insurance and auto insurance, right? It's much more affordable than that. So.
But then when your term's over, then you're older, and so then you have a much higher rate, right?
Correct. And that's why we'll always recommend term life insurance is great, and it makes sense for certain points in your life. Like, you know, I have a 7-year-old, right? It makes sense for me to get a 20-year policy because if, God forbid, something were to happen to me before he was, you know, 27 years old, he's going to need that money to fall back on because I would be there to support him. Probably, if we're being real, you're going to support your kids into the mid-20s, right?
Right.
So if something were to happen to me, you know, I would want to make sure there is, yeah, I would want to make sure there's something there for them to fall back on. And,
for real.
You know, people don't think about that. You know, if you die, at what point does your spouse or your kids have to move and completely change their life even more than it already has by losing you?
Right.
To you know, just make life happen. So,
well, and assessing that is the hardest thing. That was the hardest question that I was asked was, mm-hmm. how much do you need to take care of your kids until they're ready to be out on their own?
Right.
Well, I have a 12-year-old, and I was like, I don't have any idea.
Right. Exactly. And I that's why we do, you know, we have a process that we use, and it's called Guide Me. It's a great process, right? And it literally will walk you through at what stage we think certain coverage can fall off. But at the end of the day, it's also up to you. You know, if you want to use it as a retirement vehicle too, well, then you're going to need a little bit more coverage, right? Maybe right. not necessarily in term, but maybe in permanent, right?
Right.
So that's why I keep coming back to it. It's customized based on each individual person. Because yeah, you don't know what life's going to throw at you. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of our people that listen to this are they're business owners. So you keep referencing, you know, children and spouses and things yep. like that. But what about the business owners? You know, the work spouses, you know, work husbands, work wives, you know, sure. my business partner, I've known for 20 years, you know, mm-hmm. but, you know, he has access to a bunch of stuff, you right. know, money, bank accounts, and those. And, you know, what if our business goes under, you know, there are mm-hmm. ways that we can protect ourselves
Absolutely.
And our team members as well. So what are some examples of ways that, you know, business owners should consider whether they're 1099, a W-2, mm-hmm. I guess they wouldn't be a business owner if they're W-2, but a 1099, an LLC, an S-Corp, sure. all those different types of things.
Yeah, to be very short with it, yes, there's a million ways they can do that. It just depends on what you want to do. You know, whether that's long-term care, whether that comes in the form of benefits, long-term care, IDI, that sort of thing. Whether that's a buy-sell agreement with one person wants to get out, there's an agreement set in place already, or whether that's just key employee insurance, right? If everything's in a trust and y'all are, the great thing about what I do is I'm a quarterback to everybody else that's important to you, right? Whether that's your lawyer, your business partner, your CPA, whatever the case may be. And we, you know, what I would tell people in that situation, make sure everything's in a trust and you keep your money separate from your business money.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was an entrepreneur I mixed everything and I did my taxes for the first year and I thought my head was going to explode because I had to go through my entire year and like highlight what I thought was probably a business expense. Right.
Right.
Meals and
entertainment.
Meals and entertainment. Everything under. Right. Meals and entertainment. Every time I stopped at a gas station for like $4, I'm like,
toll tag.
Oh, toll tag. Yeah, man. Mile IQ. That was my app. That was the way to go. But no, you know, there's a lot of protection you can do because, you know, to your point, if your business partner all of a sudden were to pass away, what happens now? Like, does right. the business have to close down? Well, not necessarily. You can take steps to get business life insurance as well.
So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Simply Gold was in a much similar situation as far as, I mean, before we had a sales team, mm-hmm. it was just myself.
Right.
So in that very, very specific example, if I were to pass, the business would stop.
Right.
Because I was the only revenue generating,
right.
you know, team member. Everybody else is on the support side. So yep. now we're in a different bubble. And so what we try to do is we try to empower our team members by not making them be employees,
right.
by allowing them the opportunity to become entities.
Right.
So that way they can take advantage of all Absolutely. The tax savings and build wealth and, mm-hmm. and do that for their families. So that's a strategy we've done. So in exchange for PTO time and, sure. and all that other stuff, We spend that money that we would spend on like payroll taxes on education.
Sure.
So we provide the education for them.
Right.
You know, it's a slow, you know, installment. You know, we've just brought on 3 or 4 or 5 mm-hmm. team members to do that in the last 60 days, you know, but that's our hope and goal is to allow and to empower our team members to, for them to take advantages of the same stuff that we as the business owners, mm-hmm. Take advantage of as well.
Yep. And there's a lot of advantages to take, you know, there are certain policies and things you can put in place that are actually tax deductible to a business owner, specifically S Corp. So, it's one of those things. Ask your friendly neighborhood life insurance agent. There's something they can do for you, I promise.
So I worked at the Anatole for a year.
You like working in a lot of rooms.
It was 1,600 rooms.
It's even more now.
Oh
yeah,
they've added on to it. Yeah.
So I didn't know that. Because this was a long, long time ago. This was like in my 20s.
What did you do there?
I was a front desk agent, and I was awful at it. Yeah, because I couldn't handle the volume. This is a volume.
Oh, this is like machine. 800 people in two, like
in and
900 people.
So like you would get there at 7 a.m. to work, and like you'd see 3,000 people check out of their rooms, and because you were there till 3, at 1 you'd already start seeing another 1,000 people checking into their rooms, like the early check-ins.
I would have been overwhelmed.
So like in an 8-hour period, you weren't like hanging out. Like you were always talking, doing, like your brain was always going. So I was just like fried every day,
running high credit limits, doing bucket checks. Yeah. I mean, and then you have someone like me come over to you and be like, remember that one person you talked to? Well, she didn't really think that she got good service. Can you tell me what happened? And
Do you remember Misty? Or John or Susie, you know, what happened in that situation? I'm like, I don't know.
And I'm always that guy. I'm like, oh, man, I'm sorry to have to do this to you, but I need you to really think back on this, all right? She's really upset. So
like, what's the answer if you don't remember? Be like, oh, I guess I messed up.
Yeah, I apologize profusely to the guests. The worst thing you can do is, unless you have proof that your employee did something really bad, don't take it out on the employee. If there's a pattern there or something,
because people are people.
Yeah.
So,
and I mean,
we deal with it a little bit too because we're approaching high volume.
Right.
Right. So back in the day with Simply Gold, you know, I'd bring on 2 or 3 customers a month. Now we're bringing 30 on a month.
Nice.
So because of the volume, we're experiencing, you know, some interesting characters as well. I learned a lot from it. I mean, I learned how to, like, you know, when I point, I never use one finger. I always like cut my hand, use 2 or 3, you know, it's always the whole
hand.
Yep. So it's always, you know, down the hall, around the corner, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Don't point.
Never point. They always say if you have 1 point finger, that you have 3 pointing back at you. It's kind of an insult that you can give somebody that points at you.
If you're blaming, like pointing blame, you say it's your fault. Well, it might be your fault, but there's 3 fingers pointing back at you.
Right.
So it's probably also your fault.
Right.
No, I think, you know, more than anything, whether it's hotels or what y'all are doing or what I'm doing.
I don't think I would point at a client ever. Like, that just seems like.
Right. Not... You need to go that way.
Yeah. Excuse my problem was like through the years, I wasn't detailed enough. That was my problem. So like I worked in a restaurant. I worked at 60 Vines in Uptown Dallas.
Oh, nice. All right.
And so I worked a brunch shift and the person needed ketchup for their sandwich or whatever. So I took what I thought was a ketchup or something cylindrical, right? So that's what my perception was like. Oh, this is in the shape of what I need.
Right.
But instead of a ketchup ramekin, it was a coffee creamer thing. So I thought it was okay, but the chef saw it and like never let it go, right? Like Gordon Ramsay'd my ass like all the way through it. And so that was my problem is like, I was like, well, it's cylindrical. It's in the same color. It's generally speaking the same shape.
Right.
So like, why wouldn't it be okay?
Right.
I did that same thing at another restaurant that I worked at in my 20s and we ran out of long spoons for the iced tea. So I put a fork in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was like, why the fuck did you put a fork?
I used to work at Chili's
and I'm like,
I knew all
we ran
like
out of spoons.
Like
why wouldn't I just put something in it? And you know, that's not the way. Right. So I was like, I don't understand what the difference is. So I just never made that connection, I guess.
So. Yeah, and I think more than anything, I mean, no matter what industry you're in, service is subjective, right? And that's one of the big points I used to hit whenever I would train staffs is you can hit every check mark on, you know, whatever list you have to ensure you give good service. At the end of the day, if the guest or the client or whoever walks away feeling like they weren't well served, there's no argument. They weren't well served, right?
Right.
And so, you know, it's important that you just remember, you know, sometimes you catch people on a bad day, and sometimes you gotta be a little bit of a chameleon and
right.
know, talk to them how they want to be talked to, I guess. Tell them they're a special little snowflake. So all that stuff.
Yeah. So I got out of it. I enjoy eating at restaurants. That's to the extent of it. I love staying at hotels. I'm a what's the Hilton Diamond? I'm a Diamond.
Oh yeah,
Diamond member. So my business nice. Partner, you don't know this story, but like Brian, my business partner, his apartment flooded.
Okay,
and he had to move out for like 6 months. Mm-hmm. So the hotel or the apartment paid for him to stay in a Hilton down the road, and so we have.
Yeah.
Thousands of points, thousands. And so with the Diamond Club, you can gift it to a friend.
Yeah.
So he gifted it to me. And I mean, on top of the Vegas comps that we get, we also haven't paid for a Hilton brand in like a year and a half.
Nice. So, loyalty programs with hotels are underestimated. There's yeah. some really, really, really good programs out there.
Yeah. They say you should stay at the same brand.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're all groups now. Yep. It used to be like just
if you're a, it's right. like Hyatt, Hilton, or Marriott, like just right. or Omni, and those are like the big four.
Right.
Pick your brand, stay there, so you just accumulate points every time.
Yeah,
especially if you travel a lot.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. Like eventually, like they just start giving you upgrades, yep. like randomly.
Oh yeah,
you know,
oh,
nice. Especially if they're low occupancy, they're mm-hmm. like, oh, you're a Diamond member, let's just upgrade your room. So you walk in randomly, and you're like, oh, this is
you're what. The you're the first person to be upgraded to. Like mm-hmm. If a group comes in and they wanted 60 kings, right? But we only have 50 kings to sell. Well, I'm going to go through and I'm going to look at my highest rated members, and those are the people that. But I have a bunch of suites, so I'm going to upgrade all these people to suites now, and then
yeah.
if I have to move, you know, your Expedias or something like that.
Yeah. It's a science. And that's why I wasn't prepared for that when I worked at the Anatole. Like I should have worked at like Hampton Inn for a year. You know what I mean? Just to learn like the ropes or whatever. Instead, right. I put myself in one of the largest convention hotels in the freaking Southwest, man. Like I think we were second to or either first or second to the Gaylord at that time.
Yep.
Wow.
Well, and then you got to get to the queue of the day. And It is a science. It's there's a formula to win there, and it's not easy. So.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Sounds intense.
Yeah. So do you miss it at all, or are you pretty much checked out, ready to go?
I mean, I didn't think I would. You know, I do. There are still days where it's like, man, it was cool that I used to be like. I'll see a, you know, I'll see a, like a an Omni commercial, an Omni ad, and I was like, oh man, I know that person and that person, and oh, I used to outsell that person and. You know, I used to be a part of that, right? I was
right.
part of that fabric. And there's part of that that I miss a little bit, but I mean, I get to work from home. You know, my kid comes home from school. We play catch. We, you know, hang out. I cook dinner for everybody. Wait till he goes to bed, and then I go right back to work. So it's my work is obviously centered around my clients, but I think I do a good job of letting know my clients know exactly what I am. And that's, I'm a family man. I'm, you know, I'm strong in my faith, family man, and those are the things that are important to me. And I think they know if I didn't answer their call, there's a really good reason. Right. And mm-hmm. so that wasn't necessarily the case in hotels. So I would say overall, no, I'm not looking back by any means.
There's some cool hotels though. What's the coolest hotel you've stayed in or been in or seen? Like mine's the Virgin.
Virgin.
Yeah. Those are fun.
Montage Deer Valley, I think would be the nicest. I worked there. Not for very long, but because I couldn't do 9,000 feet away from my family. But I mean, we were charging it was like 15, 16 grand a night during ski season, and every celebrity known to man. And
yeah,
that was also the cool part is people are like, "Have you met someone?" I'm like, "Just
there's some cool hotels out there, and you don't have to pay a lot of money."
Right.
So like, I went to New Orleans, and my customer was staying at the Ritz-Carlton.
Mm-hmm.
Not cool. I mean, like, I went in there. It looked just like a normal building, like an office building almost.
Oh.
Yeah, ever since Marriott took over Ritz-Carlton, it's in my opinion, the stature of it's gone down.
The drinks were $22.
That's where we make our money back, right?
But it just looked like a regular building.
Yeah. They make them in resort fees. This whole resort fee thing is a pain. Hmm. It's crazy.
All right, so if you want to know what the resort fee pays for.
Internet?
That's it. Internet and, like, towels.
Yeah. Like, that's the hard costs, right? The rest is all BS, like free parking or whatever.
But also think of it this way. What's the easiest cost to me to give back to you that you're going to be the most happy about?
Resort fee. Right. So I had an issue. I went to the Horseshoe Casino in Shreveport, and it lost power, the whole building, except for the casino part.
Of course.
And so they had AC, but everything was out. And I went down very polite and I said, look, I'm not pissed. Like, it's fine. It However, happens, right? just give me back my resort fee. I'm trying not to use that for this. Like, cause that's how I feel about it. But it's an FU fee is what, you know, I call it. You know, you won't miss it. I won't miss it. So why don't we just delete those and pretend like they never happened? I saved like $80 because it's like two nights. It's like $40 a night. So yeah, like you said, it's the easiest to say, you know what? I got you. People probably didn't even use the internet anyway, you know, because people go, in my opinion, people travel for fun.
You don't travel to get on your devices.
Right. Yeah. You don't travel to sit in your room and get on your computer.
You're not going to go to the beach.
You don't?
Me?
Go on Twitter.
I tether. I'm everywhere. People don't even know where I'm at. I travel. I go to Vegas every month, once a month.
Yeah, see, I've never even been to
whole
Vegas.
Week.
Like I know
I haven't either.
One of my good friends and my mentors. She's the vice president of MGM, the F&B department at MGM. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Why you seriously have never?" I'm like, "No, I don't understand the allure in gambling, which I know is weird. Me being
I don't do to gamble
services,
though. So I go.
No, I'm single. Like I'm married now. I'm like I don't know what I do.
I'm high ADHD, super high. Okay. Right, so. I get less work done. Like if y'all left and I just sat in here, I wouldn't get work done. My mental status makes me distracted, right? So I can go to Vegas and sit in a super crowded, packed casino for hours and just knock out tons of things on my computer.
I definitely have a little ADHD too. And my wife, you know, will be sitting at home and I have to have, like, it can't just be silent.
Right.
So like I have to have the TV on. Like there has to be a show that I'm not going to be all that interested. I've probably seen it beginning to end, but it has to be on. Otherwise, I just can't focus. I can't get any work done. I'll just walk around the room or I'll spin in my chair.
And I'll start making noises. And my son will be like, Mom, what are you doing over there? And I'm like, having a concert by myself.
Like, oh, you couldn't pick that up when I was banging out there?
So. Yep. So I have to put myself in an environment that's loud and obnoxious. And so I just get more work done. But I mean, I gamble. I got tons of favorite slot machines that I love to play. I just try to get my money back from the trip.
Right.
Is really my goal. So if I can make $300 and just pay for my flight and a couple whatevers, and
there you go.
I'm in a good spot.
As long as you have the discipline to walk away, that's where people get in trouble is when you don't have the discipline to walk away.
Yeah. That's how you win at slots. Is like if you put $100 in and you win early, like you've won.
Yeah. Go. Walk.
Like that's the win. Get out. It's
I don't
not.
Know anything
it's
about
not
gambling.
Keep hitting the button and hope to win more. It's hey, I put 100. Now I'm up $30. Like take that 30 and go buy yourself a drink or two.
Right.
And that's the win.
Right.
Or just use that 30 to gamble with. Like keep your 100 out and just keep that. You're only using that 30 now to gamble. So
right.
Otherwise.
Yeah. Right.
I had a buddy who went to a bachelor party in New Orleans, which is a fantastic place for a bachelor party. But we went to the casino there and
the Harris.
Yes, he had. Way too much to drink. Like, I'm shocked that they let us gamble money, but we did a lot. And he
like, are they consenting to his gambling?
Right
at that point.
And like he throws down $1,000, and he's like black, and it's not roulette, but yeah, roulette. Mm-hmm. And it comes up black, and he just looks at me. He's like, "Can I borrow $1,000?" I'm like, "I watched you just throw $1,000 away in one roll, and now you want me to back you for another $1,000? Like, get out of here." Like, those are the type of people I'm like, I can't go to
casinos.
So if
it doesn't land on black and you call black, that's
you
a
get
loss?
Nothing.
You get nothing.
Oh,
right.
I don't know anything about wrong.
Yeah.
It's generally easy. Like, the outside is red or black, one, you know, even or odd, whatever.
And then you can get specific numbers, like black 24, red 16, whatever the case
So might. He called black and he lost his money.
Yeah.
So
and it came up red.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you put $10 on black, and it's black, then now he has $20 total.
It's the worst odds. You don't win as much. But like if you do black 24 and it hits black 24, it pays out like, you know, 50-1 or whatever. So
it's a whole math because technically it's a 50-50 or a 48-52. Like you got about a 50 chance of getting one or the other. So if you're down a bunch of money, ideally if you have the money to keep going, like sustain that and like don't give up or don't leave the table. Because as soon as you leave the table, you reset the odds.
Right. Yeah.
So, but if you stayed and did every single roll because you had that money to give, then you should be relatively back even after a duration of spins.
Okay.
But inevitably, and I see it in my industry too, right? Everyone's like, well, I can get better returns if I invested on Acorn, right, or something.
Right.
I'm like, go ahead. You're it's literally you're pulling the arm on a slot machine. Like,
right.
If you want to gamble it, go ahead. like, not a big deal.
I've gambled in Bitcoin. I've won. I've lost. It's been fun, but it's the same. It's all gamble.
About saying, like, how's that going?
Yeah, it went well. I won. It did.
There was a time there. Yeah, was going well.
I put $10,000 in Bitcoin on a Monday and pulled it out on a Friday. I made like $1,500. It was awesome. Yep. But yeah, I mean, that was the short play, you know. Yep. And I and then you lose half of this. Like, I'm telling you, either way, you're screwed. Like putting your money into that kind of investment.
Yeah.
Because of the $1,500, I only made $750 because it's a short. You have to keep it in longer than a year for it to not be taxed.
So you called the short.
Right.
Right. And so then you pay the taxes. You also have to pay the cost basis on top of that. So.
Yeah. So that it's like you're not even up like starting. So like in Oklahoma to play at those tables, they charge you $1 each hand or 75 cents or 50 cents.
Right.
So like on average, someone told me this like a long time ago, but like on average, just by playing there for an hour, you're down $60 already automatically.
Right.
So then the casino's already making $60 times like say six seats, right? Which is probably what, 300? Or something. So the casino's already making $300 an hour on that table.
Is that why the house always wins?
Mm-hmm.
That's just one of the reasons. But yeah.
This is one of the reasons.
That's why if you're gambling with stocks, do mutual funds or call. I can't tell people enough. Like, call a financial professional. I get Acorns Fund and like it's, but like people that are putting their life savings in Ethereum or something. I'm like, what do you? Come on, like hedge your bets a little bit when it comes to your retirement or your life savings.
Tell us a little bit how to get in touch with you if they choose and they want to work with you. Where do we find you? All those types of things.
You can call me on my cell phone. I usually always answer 972-974-0677. You can always email me mrholmes@ft.newyorklife.com.
And you're also a member of Master Network Chapters.
I am a member of Tony's Tuesdays at 10.
Oh, the famous Tony's at Tuesdays at 10. Put it in your calendar, everybody.
Every single person that is in Master Networks that just heard that rolled their eyes. I guarantee you.
Like, I thought it. You said it.
What does Aaron call us? The 3T or T3?
T3.
We went to Aaron's chapter and she was like, stop saying it.
Yeah.
I tried out T-cubed. It didn't go over. So, I was like, all right, fine.
Well, we as an organization are a member of about 8 chapters.
Right,
and counting.
There you go.
Yeah, we love them. So we're starting. We started a chapter in Highland Village called the Awesome Chapter. Coincidentally, it's at Awesome Times Restaurant.
Oh, nice.
So that worked out really well. And then there's also another one called the Goat Chapter. It's at
I
a
saw
restaurant.
That. Yep. I saw that.
That's a lucky thing there. But no, we're excited to have you. So thanks so much for joining us today on our podcast, man.
I appreciate it.
And if you see us in the hallways and you want to say hi, definitely do that. Absolutely. Otherwise, man, have a great week, great month, great year.
Y'all too, yeah.
Crush it. I'm excited about your journey with New York Life. And I'm sure in 5 years, man, you'll thank yourself that you started when you did.
Yeah, I hope so. Otherwise, my wife's going to be really upset.
Bye, guys.
They said I'll take it.